Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. So if the Trump administration is heading for an early political demise, and that's actually possible, it will probably be because he has made such enemies so quickly out of the nation's intelligence agencies. Just look at today's news. The Wall Street Journal reports that U.S. intelligence officials have withheld sensitive information from Trump because they fear it could be leaked or compromised by members of his team. The New York Times reports that Trump plans to appoint a New York billionaire to undertake a broad review of the intelligence agencies. In other words, he'll be investigating them while they're investigating and withholding information from him. The resignation of National Security Advisor Michael Flynn seems to have come because of intelligence leaks about Flynn's conversations with the Russian ambassador that exposed Flynn as a liar. The main headline on Breitbart today, the deep state bumps off General Flynn. Who's the next target? No wonder Trump tried to change the subject yesterday from Flynn's dishonesty to the leaks.
I think it's very, very unfair what's happened to General Flynn, the way he was treated, and the documents and papers that were illegally, I stress that, illegally leaked. Very, very unfair.
Meanwhile, the Washington Post's top headline when I opened their app this morning was Congress reasserts itself. Flynn's resignation is shifting the balance of power between President Trump and Congress, another sign of Trump's autonomy being dinged by preferring Putin to the CIA. And MSNBC's Morning Joe, which Trump is believed to frequently watch, was wondering again today about why Trump shows so much fealty to Russia. What would ordinarily be dismissed as a wild conspiracy theory that Russia might have something on Donald Trump gets at least some speculation in respectable circles because of everything else he's done, including fire Flynn for being subject to what? Russian blackmail. Morning Joe, by the way, has fired someone, Kellyanne Conway, from its guest list. Co-host Mika Brzezinski revealed that bombshell yesterday.
We know for a fact she tries to book herself on this show. I won't do it because I don't believe in fake news or information that is not true. And that is every time I've ever seen her on television, something's askew, off, or incorrect.
Kellyanne classics like Alternative Facts, The Bowling Green Massacre, by Ivanka Stuff, and Trump Has Full Confidence in Flynn just came too close together for Mika and Joe. Our first guest today to talk news and media is the newest MSNBC host, Greta Van Susteren, who recently got the 6 p.m. hour with her show For the Record. As you cable news watchers know, she is one of the few to have anchored on CNN, Fox News Channel, and MSNBC, going back to the 90s when she rose to prominence as a CNN legal analyst. Greta, thank you so much for coming on with us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you very much for inviting me, and I always tease everybody that says when everyone talks about how many places I've worked, I say I can't hold a job.
Can't hold a job, or everyone wants you, or everyone wants
well,
you.
Well, either one.
can we start on the relationship between Trump and the intelligence agencies? Do you see this just as palace intrigue or a more defining early issue for this presidency?
You know, as I was listening to you, I thought I sort of needed a GPS map to follow this because right. It really is palace intrigue. But look, you know, President Trump sort of started this because remember he took those swipes at the intelligence agency a long time ago. Now, leaks have been the bread and butter in the Washington, D.C., where I work, you know, for, you know, decades. That's how we make our money in the media is by getting leaks. But the problem is this is at a fever pitch. And, it's really rugged here. And I don't know, you know, something's got to stop because, you know, we need to have our leaders focusing on doing things important for the country like Obamacare, tax reform, or whatever it is on your menu. But now we are steeped in this, and it is consuming everyone. And you talked about the Congress retaking things. Is it yesterday? Last night we had on Congressman Adam Kinzinger from Illinois, and he introduced, he was a co-sponsor of a bipartisan bill, which said that there could be no sanctions relief for Russia without authorization of Congress. which completely strips away power from the president. I don't think Trump is going to sign it if it gets to his desk. But, things are really heating up in this city.
Well, you present a very interesting potential conflict. Trump vetoing a bill, taking power for Russian sanctions from him by the Republican Congress.
Right. So that's why we have to go back to the GPS navigator that we need for all of this stuff so we can figure out who goes where and who does what.
I think people who voted for Trump wanted him to pick some fights with ISIS, with immigrants here illegally, and with companies that move jobs overseas. And if he focused his fights there, he could actually become more popular than he was on Election Day. But he seems to be spoiling for a fight with everyone all the time. Do you think it's just his personality?
I don't know if it's his personality, but he certainly is having fights with everybody. I think that he got elected because, in part, at least from my home state of Wisconsin, which had not gone Republican since 1984, and Secretary Clinton didn't campaign there, is that people were sort of fed up with Washington, and it was sort of anybody but, and he was sort of the Hail Mary pass, and because they're sort of sick of the fact that there are a lot of things that were going in the wrong direction for a lot of people in this country, not for everybody. So I think that's why he got elected. And I think they liked his brashness against the Eastern establishment. But we got to put a lid on this and try to move forward on the issues that are that really people need to have addressed.
Breitbart is what it is. But what do you think of their headline, "Deep State," which means the permanent government, certainly including the CIA, knocks off Flynn? Who's the next target?
Well, I'm always suspicious. I mean, I'm obviously, like a lot of people, I'm suspicious of Breitbart right now because of Stephen Bannon was used to be over there, and I assume he still has a direct line into it. So I don't know if that is sort of a headline that is, part of partisan politics in Washington, or I don't know if that's real journalism. I don't know. I'm suspicious of the headline. I don't know what to believe of it.
There's no question that it's an agenda piece, but it's interesting that.
Is it the Breitbart agenda, or is it some inner faction in the White House that is trying to create the, I don't know whose agenda it is. It's somebody's agenda, and maybe it's both of theirs. I don't know. It's somebody's.
Well, do you think the CIA cares ideologically or for any other reason about the hyper-nationalist Bannon and Miller and Breitbart wing that Flynn seemed to be a part of?
I think the CIA are people, a lot of the lifers have been there, and they've devoted their lives to it, and they don't like their noses dirty by a lot of this stuff. They don't like the accusations. They didn't like the swipe early on. And I think that members of the CIA are quite human like the rest of us, and I suspect that there's a lot of infighting, and it's hard to decide who's doing what.
On Trump complaining about the leaks about Flynn, I want to play a montage of Trump clips that you used on your show last night. This is Trump at various points in the campaign celebrating Russia and celebrating leaks.
I've always felt, fine about Putin. I think that he is he's a strong leader. He's a powerful leader.
Russia, if you're listening, I hope you're able to find the 30,000 emails that are missing.
And all you have to do is take a look at WikiLeaks.
This just came out. WikiLeaks. I love WikiLeaks. Amazing how nothing's secret today when you talk about the internet.
Oh, we love WikiLeaks. Boy, they have really WikiLeaks. They have revealed a lot.
Montage of Trump at different times used on Greta Van Susteren's show on MSNBC last night. She's with us now. And, of course, Greta, that was then, and now Trump is trying to make the leaking of the dirt on Flynn the bigger story than the fact that his own White House concluded Flynn was a blackmail risk. Does Trump think no one will notice the reversal, or that the media is so distrusted that his own credibility won't take a hit?
Well, I think a little bit of both. I mean, everybody hates the media. People hate the media and the lawyers, and I'm a double. I fit both categories, so I'm always in trouble. But, it's almost like I don't get it in this town. And it's not just the president, but it's the House and the Senate, Republicans and Democrats. They think that the media is like Snapchat, that they can say something a year ago or 6 months ago and it just vanishes and it'll never be seen again. I mean, I wish they'd come over and look at our digital video libraries. We do have these statements, but, for some reason they don't seem to care. They say they'll say something, and then they'll say something completely different a month later, maybe even a day later, like we're a bunch of idiots and don't have the video.
The Trump loyalists at Breitbart say there's no transcript of Flynn's remarks. The leakers only leaked the fact that sanctions were mentioned because that's their best weapon. More details might make the mention look fleeting or benign. What do you think of that possibility?
Well, actually, I said a week ago that I'd like to see a transcript if it existed. Let's say it's a 15-page transcript if it existed, and 14 pages about sanctions, then I'd say Flynn's a liar. If it's in 15 pages, it's just one sentence, then I'd say, okay, he forgot. But that's not why he got – I mean, that's not why I understand that he got fired. Remember that Stephen Hadley was on my show last night, who used to be the National Security Advisor. He said that he would expect that in a transition that the incoming one would be speaking about sanctions with a Russian ambassador. Jeremy Bash, who was number two – or who was CIA Director Panetta's right hand at the CIA, likewise, and a Democrat, said that he, too, would expect sanctions to be discussed. So that's not – it's not the fact of discussing sanctions with it. The problem is that you had the vice president about January 14th going on TV having spoken to Flynn, then said that Flynn didn't talk sanctions. So now the vice president looks like a liar. And then you go on for about 2 weeks, and nobody tells the vice president apparently that's not so. And in the interim, you've got the then-acting attorney general, Sally Yates, going to the White House counsel and saying that sanctions were discussed. And then the White House sort of sits on it forever and forever and doesn't. And then finally it comes out an explosive that looks like who's on first. And then he gets ousted because of lack of trust. I mean, you know, can you really have the national security guy misleading the vice president of the United States? You make the vice president look bad. That's not you want a completely straight national security advisor. You don't want someone who sort of, you know, the colors the facts. So he had to go. And then you have the odd things. You have Spicer, the press secretary, saying it's a trust issue. And then an hour later, 2 hours later, 3 hours later, the president says he wasn't fired for a trust issue. He was fired because of the rotten press, the leaks. So it's like, go figure.
Go figure. But that all leads to a question that I've been wondering about that really makes me scratch my head. I'm curious to get your take on it. Why do you think Flynn bothered to lie to the rest of the Trump team about discussing sanctions with the Russian ambassador? Trump had already won the election. Flynn was already named the incoming national security advisor. As Stephen Hadley, the former national security advisor, said to you last night, talking to the Russian ambassador to the United States, even about a possible change in policy from Obama, could actually be seen as fairly normal, maybe even expected. Not exactly Watergate, but apparently Flynn chose to cover it up to Mike Pence and everyone else. What do you think happened there?
Well, I think that's Washington. That's always been the problem in Washington. It's never the original act. It's the so-called cover-up act, you know, that gets everybody into trouble here in the city. I mean, if you're straightforward and honest in the beginning, you know, we're quite forgiving in this city because, you know, everyone makes mistakes or whatever. But it's always the, quote, cover-up. But, I mean, look, you know, I don't understand a lot of things about a lot of people. I can't explain Mike Flynn. But there are some other troubling things. I mean, at least for me personally, I didn't like that he's standing up before a crowd. And 6 months ago or 8 months ago, you know, leading a chant, lock her up, lock her up, lock her up. You can dislike Secretary Clinton, but, you know, it shows such a lack of respect. And I sort of expect someone as a general in the military. You can be forceful. You can be robust. You can say all sorts of things, but you don't have to. I never liked that. I feel very uncomfortable with that name-calling chant stuff. It's more seventh grade, and it's I don't mean to insult seventh graders. But I just think that he got way too, let me be polite, enthusiastic.
And he had that tweet, it's rational to fear Muslims. That would have been disqualifying in the past.
Yeah, well, a lot of things would have been disqualifying in the past. I mean, look at President Clinton's behavior. That would have been disqualifying in the past. I mean, there's a lot of personal behavior by a lot of people in politics that's disqualifying. I mean, Anthony Weiner made a reappearance running for mayor. I mean, people make lots of reappearances where you think that they would, you know, do other things.
Let me go on to some other things, but I also want to invite listeners to call in on what we've been talking about so far or anything else you want to ask MSNBC host Greta Van Susteren, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You've interviewed Trump a fair number of times, and I read a quote from you that you're saving your first ask for him as president until he takes a trip to the Middle East. Do I have that right?
Oh, no. Well, I said till he takes his first foreign trip, and my guess is that the first one will be to the Middle East. I'll take any foreign trip. I figure that now that he's president, that my chances of getting him are much less. Look, when then Senator Barack Obama ran for senator, he was happy to do my show when he was running and get him off him. But once he became president, you know, then it's few and far between. In fact, because I was at Fox News, he wouldn't do an interview with me when he was president. He would do them when he was a candidate. So I was just being sort of selective. I'm just, you know, waiting for the best time. And he did say to me when he was running, I sort of put the hook in. I probably did it with every candidate of the 16 who were running on the Republican side. Is that I'd already done 8 foreign trips, by the way, with Secretary Clinton, which is Secretary of State. He said, can I have your first foreign trip? And he said yes. So that's what I'm just trying to hedge my bets.
So as someone interested in Middle East news, what did you think of this response yesterday in Trump's joint appearance with Netanyahu to the question whether he prefers a one-state or a two-state solution? Listen.
I'm looking at two-state and one-state. And I like the one that both parties like. I'm very happy with the one that both parties like.
With Netanyahu giggling in the background.
I thought that was completely consistent. I actually was not, you know, I thought that was actually a good answer, because what he's basically saying is that, at least the way I heard it, is that whatever solves this, so that both sides are, you know, feel at peace, you know, that whatever solves it, whether it's one state, two state, three state, four states, I thought that was a real sort of non-answer, and he's sort of staying above the fray. I did not take that like a lot. I did not read into it what others did.
You know, I actually agree with you. It's gotten so much press as Trump breaking with the usual two-state solution policy of the United States. But I heard that one more as him setting himself up to be a negotiator. Whatever works for Israeli and Palestinian leaders to make peace with each other, he can be for, which would pretty much have to be a two-state solution, I think everybody knows. But this way, it doesn't look like the U.S. is forcing a two-state solution down Israel's throat. Maybe that's too generous of an interpretation.
I'm totally with you. That's how I heard it. That's exactly how I heard it. And I think it's sort of consistent with other things I've read since, that he sort of has his view that sort of this has to be sort of a regional solution, that they want people from other nations in the area to sort of step in and help.
Right. And then it's a question of what step in and help means. I don't want to get too bogged down in the Middle East in this conversation, but, you know, the right-wing Israeli version of step in and help is there's no Palestinian state, and Jordan primarily kind of is the Palestinian state, and Palestinians have some official connection with Jordan. Well, that's never been acceptable to the Palestinians. There's a more internationalist, you know, centrist liberal view of how the Arab states help, which is that if there is actually a Palestinian state, then the Arab states will come on board and recognize Israel and do something to help secure Israel's security if the Palestinian state were to really go bad.
There we need that GPS again to follow all that stuff. You know, I totally agree. You know, here's a couple things. Is that I was just recently in Jordan, and just as an aside, and Jordan is under enormous pressure because they've got so many Syrians who have come over the border into Jordan, and a lot of the Jordanian citizens are upset because the Syrians are undercutting them with wages. So it's creating, you know, it's a bad situation there. I mean, that's sort of a slightly powder keg there. But this is just another sort of random thing about Israel. I have traveled the world in disasters. I've been to refugee camps in Sudan. I've been to cholera camps, cholera hospitals in Haiti. I've been to the earthquakes in Haiti and Ecuador. I've been to Liberia with the Ebola. And the one nation that I always see showing up from the Middle East is Israel. They've got a team that shows up. And it's like, you know, so I'm sympathetic to Israel because I see them out there doing so much good, and I question whether the Arab nations, those who can, whether they do enough to help solve the problem in the Middle East.
Gene in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Gene.
Hi, good morning. I want to ask you a question. You know, General Flynn, after Obama took the action to expose the diplomat, spoke to the Russians, told them, you know, we're going to work on a sanction. Trust me, we're going to lift it up. And then the Russian didn't take any action. You know, didn't expose any American diplomat. So how would they trust just an advisor if they knew that was coming from the president?
Can you help me out with that question?
Yeah,
I didn't hear the whole question.
I think what he's asking is, why didn't the president take action against Flynn when he first learned from Sally Yates that Flynn might be compromised as a blackmail risk and had lied to him?
Well, I don't know. Let me give you just sort of a theory, a guess, is that he was – I did read that he had interviewed other people, so he may have been trying to do that. Number two is that that it's such a sensitive job visit, maybe you want to try to rehabilitate the person and try to figure out what to do. If that's 20/20 hindsight, you think, like, why didn't he fire him? I agree. Why didn't he fire him? But I don't have that answer. Or maybe that he just hates to be wrong and hates to lose somebody and have the press all over him that he hired the wrong person.
Here's a question for you from a listener on Twitter who asks, why can't Greta clearly say that Mike Flynn's comments on Muslims would have been disqualifying? Drags in Clinton.
Which question? When
I asked you that would have been disqualifying in the past, and you said, well, a lot of people, Hillary Clinton did things that would have been disqualifying in the past. But
I said Bill Clinton, the whole Monica Lewinsky thing.
Oh, Bill Clinton.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I didn't mean Hillary Clinton. I did not mean that at all. I was just saying that in Washington, we keep moving the bar as to what's a disqualifier. I agree. So, I mean, I'd like to move the bar back to a lot of these things, in terms of moving it back. Totally. And the idea of a Muslim ban, I mean, that's, it's unconstitutional. You can't just ban all Muslims. We don't do that. I mean, I will tell you what the legal position is in looking at that. It was not a Muslim ban, that it was a temporary ban on people from Muslim majority countries. A federal court will rule whether or not that is unconstitutional or not. That will be decided by the courts. And one of the arguments that the Trump administration will present is that there are many other Muslim majority countries that were not on the ban. And I mean, so there's a whole long tortured argument on both sides. But you can't just blanket ban Muslims from this country. That's a given.
What do you think's going on with the temporary ban issue, which seems to have disappeared now with Flynn in the headlines? They were either going to appeal the Ninth Circuit ruling to the Supreme Court or to the full Ninth Circuit, or they were going to come out with a new version of the ban and start over. But it's kind of gone away the last few days.
Well, this has also gone nutty. And let me tell you how. A couple of things. One is I'm hearing through the grapevine, by the way, that there'll be a new executive order next Monday or Tuesday. But here's the thing that's troubling. Is the reason that the president says that he issued an executive order, I think it was on the 27th of January, without consulting others on Capitol Hill, is because it was an emergency, that he didn't want to tip off people what he was going to do who might be trying to sneak in this country doing bad things. So he said it was an emergency. Okay. Well, once it was issued and once the court ruled on it, it then went on it went through the judicial system, went on a court ride, and it went up to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit, in which at that time the U.S. Court of Appeals said that the trial court judge was correct in temporarily, a TRO, putting a hold on the president's ban. So now it has this sort of tortured trip that's going on through the court system. Well, if it's such an emergency, why is the Trump administration fighting this in the court system? Why are they waiting to see if the full court of the Ninth Circuit will hear it? They can just forget about it and just rip up the last one and do another one and do it next week. But we get trapped in these crazy sort of nutty games of like who's winning and who's not winning. But if truly this is an emergency, and truly if it could be written in a constitutional fashion, then that's what the president should be doing, and not getting into a fight in the court system with the Ninth Circuit or with the federal court judge in Seattle.
Walter in Chatham, you're on WNYC with Greta Van Susteren from MSNBC. Hi, Walter.
Good morning. I just tuned in, and Greta, I'm loving the kind of nuanced conversation we're having here. And it occurs to me, I've never heard this voice from you before. I know you primarily from your days at Fox. And so I'd like to ask about Fox News. How does Fox News choose its editorial topics, and how does it choose its voice? And by the way, you said seventh graders before, and a lot of times I think that Fox News makes its opinion known by the tone of voice when they said Obama. But so how does it work, and how will it work now?
Let me answer a question. First, let me give you just a little vignette. Is that once when I left Katrina, I was in the airport, someone came up and talked to me, and I just spent like a week seeing horrible things with lots of death and destruction, and I had any sleep, and someone said to me, wow, you have no sense of humor. People who meet me on the street and talk to me, they say, well, you have no sense of humor. Don't judge people necessarily by TV. However, now, let me go back to Fox News. I was at CNN for 6-8 years. I was at Fox at 14 and a half. I'm now at MSNBC. And I will tell you this, that never for me, I don't know if it's true of anybody else, nobody ever told me what to do, what to say, what not to do, what not to say. And I don't know, maybe if it's just me, but I know that, the Fox has a lot of conservative people on the network, but I will say this is that Fox is like every other network, I think, and every newspaper, they're divided between the news gathering section and the editorial page. And I think that Fox is heavy on the editorial page with O'Reilly, Megyn Kelly, and Hannity. They were at night, and Tucker Carlson. But you've got the news gatherers, which are more like Brett Baer, James Rosen, Jennifer Griffin, Catherine Herridge. But the more opinion side is a rather forceful, strong side. But I will tell you that nobody at Fox ever told me what to say or do. If you didn't like my show, blame me.
You don't think the news hole also leans right over there?
I have to admit that I haven't looked back in the rearview mirror. Brett Baer is in the office next to me, and he's my direct competition at 6. And so, I want people to watch me and not Brett Baer. But I tell you that Brett is an honest guy. He was doing what he thought was right in news gathering.
You probably saw that Fox News Channel is the front page headline subject in the New York Daily News today, that there may be an ongoing federal criminal investigation into whether the network deceived shareholders about the millions of dollars in sexual harassment suit payouts with the charges against Roger Ailes and I guess others. Does that seem consistent with anything you know or witnessed there?
I'll stay far away from that one. It's like I say, Fox News is in my rearview mirror.
Right.
And let me use the line they always use. I wish them the best.
But in general, how about the allegation by Andrea Tantaris's lawyer in that article that Roger Ailes was running a sex-fueled Playboy mansion-like cult? For you as a leader in that community, for you as somebody who's spoken about the importance of having more women in prime time, is that your impression of your old employer?
I will tell you my experience. I was 200 miles away in Washington. I never saw it. I never heard about it. It never happened to me. I said that in July, and everybody called me a great defender of Roger Ailes. It was true when I said it in July. It's true now. When I was there, I never heard it. I never saw it. It never happened to me. That's all I can tell you. I just don't know.
What do you think about Morning Joe banning Kellyanne Conway as not credible, and are you doing that for your show?
I'm not banning anybody. I don't think I'm not planning to ban anybody. If they want to ban her, fine. That's their business, their hour. They're responsible for their hour, or actually they have more than 1 hour. I'm responsible for my hour. And I suspect, this is my just wild guess, is that after a while they'll have coffee, or they'll have the famous Obama beer summit, and they'll work it out, and either she'll be on or she won't be on.
What do you think of that as editorial judgment for the moment based on all those things that have happened?
She's got some explaining to do. But that's fair. But you might want to bring her back on to do the explaining. The business of being a journalist is to try to find the facts, and the business in government sometimes is to be an advocate, and sometimes being an advocate is that you make bad judgment. I think using the term alternative facts, bad judgment. I think the fact that she came out and said that the president complete faith in Flynn, either she's out of the loop or bad judgment. But, if she, I would like to have her on and I'd like to talk to her about it.
One other MSNBC question. Al Sharpton used to have your slot. They could have put on Joy Reid or another liberal host, but they went for you and they hired Megyn Kelly from Fox, too. So does it look like they're trying to appeal more across the board political, while Fox is doubling down on its right-wing identity by replacing Megyn Kelly, who is more of a news anchor with Tucker Carlson? I know it's hard for anyone to talk about your own employers, but how would you compare the...
I'll tell you what I know, and I only know one side of it. I was not planning to go back to TV when I left the Fox News Channel. I was doing a lot of other projects, and I was enjoying it. But they had a hole. At 6 o'clock with the election show that was there, when the election came around, all of a sudden that show was over. It was a show from I can't think who had it. It's a Bloomberg show. Remember that?
Oh, it was Heilman and Halperin.
Yes. So that became a hole. So, you know, I was happy to fill a hole. That was sort of unexpected for me, so I was happy to do that. I've seen the article saying that they're bringing me over because, you know, the right-wing business. But I tell you, listen to me talk. I mean, it's like I call each issue as it comes. I don't think that's why they picked me. When I was over at the Fox News Channel, if people watched, I got Democrats over there and I got Republicans. I got Leader Pelosi over there. I traveled 8 times with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton when she was Secretary of State. I got a lot of Democrats on there. I interviewed Bill Clinton. I mean, I could go down the list. Is that, you know, but people were listening to the more of the Sean Hannity, the O'Reilly and the Megyn Kelly at night. So they were thinking that, you know, that I didn't do that. I'm over here now at MSNBC. And I get the Democrats. I got Democrats, but I also get the Republicans. I've had Senator John McCain. I had Adam Kinzinger, Republican, on last night. I mean, we have Republicans every single night. I don't think my show has changed. I think people's view of it has changed. I've always been able to get Republicans and Democrats, but because of the network that I've been assigned to or have been employed by, people assign some sort of ideology to me. I call every issue as it comes.
Last question, and back to Trump. With even the Republican Congress showing more interest in investigating Trump's Russia ties, and we know they're very comfortable with Mike Pence, is it crazy to ask, do you think Trump is at risk of early impeachment?
I think, yeah. I mean, I can't predict the future. I have to admit things are quite unusual here in Washington, and anything is possible. But I have no idea. You know, it would just be a guess as much as everybody else guessing. I have no idea on that.
They'd have to find collusion. But if they found collusion, then all bets are off, aren't they?
I think so. Oh, yes. If there's collusion, if they find collusion, I think we puts us into a different ball game. If there's collusion, if there's collusion with Russia to infect and distort a fair election in this country, I think that would be a game changer.
But to be fair, no evidence of that so far. Just so we don't give the wrong impression.
No. In fact, I mean, we have no evidence of that. I'm just saying that I would think that would be a game changer.
Greta Van Susteren hosts the 6 o'clock hour on MSNBC, her show For the Record. Thank you so much for coming on with us. Good luck with the new show.
Yep, I hope you invite me back.
I'd love to. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, the New York City Comptroller, Scott Stringer. Stay with us.